question about the gentleman that just spoke regarding programs. It's my understanding, as an example, the success of AA, Alcohol Anonymous, is continuing participation upon the part of the person affected, which means going to regular meetings for the rest of his or her life. My question is, the programs that you are developing, what is the extent of it? How long do the programs continue? Do they have an element of continuation so that the persons involved can have something to rely on that they can go back to for their continued support?
That's a great question. I don't know about AA. We haven't evaluated that, the research on AA, so I'm not going to comment on that program. But on the general topic of length of treatment, most of the programs in our list of what works are based upon evaluations of specific programs that usually have specific lengths of treatment. So some of those juvenile programs, for example, are four-month programs. They're four-month interventions. That's what's been evaluated and shown to have worked. Now, would it have worked better if it had gone 8 months or 18 months? Don't know. My job is only to evaluate what's out there, you know, and those four-month programs look like they give us that kind of rate of return. So I'm in the business of hoping that someone can test those things out. If it's 4 months and it works, that's going to be cheaper for me than having to pay for 18 months. So that's what we do on those. Some drug treatment programs have been shown to work better the longer the treatment goes on, and AA would be possibly an example. I don't know that literature.
Let's see. Larry has a.
I have a comment on that as well. A lot of the more successful juvenile programs are aimed at changing the home environment, family environment in which the juvenile lives, and not so much changing the juvenile directly. There is CBT and some aggression reduction training, but the ones where you get the really good bang for your buck tend to be the family-based interventions, either preventive interventions or after-the-fact interventions. And so one of the reasons that you might only have to do them for a time-limited period is that you're leaving behind a changed environment for the adolescent, rather than depending on a therapeutic program to keep the adolescent changed in the way that you've changed them. So that I think functional family therapy and multisystemic therapy, both of which are proven to be effective and cost effective, you can accomplish those in 3 months or something like that, and get some lasting effect. They've been evaluated over longer terms, and they do have carry forward effects even after the treatment itself has ceased.
Okay, do we have other questions? Yeah.
This is a question for Steve. If I understand correctly, part of your analysis is based on an estimate of the cost of adult incarceration. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Now, if you had, in one of your tables, in one of your reports, you guessed that the social cost of adult incarceration is about once again as much as the cost of lockup. And that was a guess. If you had underestimated the social cost of adult incarceration, what impact would that have on your analysis? For example, if the real social cost of incarcerating an adult were about three times the cost of lockup, what impact would that have on your cost-benefit analysis?
Well, of course, it would make prison look even less effective than what we would report it as being. In other words, the question is, what does prison do for you? And what does it cost, and what does it do for you? We estimated what prison does for us in terms of incapacitation, something that Larry mentioned earlier. In other words, what percent of our population do we want to lock up, and just lock up permanently? Not the same offender permanently, but just permanently have a greater percentage of our population locked up. That's what we saw in those incarceration rates. It means that permanently we've got 1% of our population locked up nationwide now, as opposed to 0.5%. And we're paying for it every year. People cycle through, but we just, at any one point in time, we have more. We think that's going to reduce crime, so that's a benefit. We think it's going to reduce But it's going to cost us something to keep that up there, including the cost to maintain the system. But also, there's arguments that are made that there are other costs to society in addition to just the fiscal costs of building and staffing those prisons. So we put in a factor of two because I don't think the research. I think the research literature is clear that it's not zero. I don't know what the multiple is. I was sort of convinced that two seemed like it made the best sense to me, my gut-level feeling here, my Merrill Lynch gut-level feeling. You know, Merrill Lynch has to make their best estimate about where this market is going when they give their investors advice. The legislature pays me to give that kind of advice. If I had made that a factor of three or four, it would have made the prison more costly relative to the benefits.
Okay, we have one more question. This will be our last one. Yes.
Okay. It should be on.
There we go.
Thank you. Representative Allot, I'm just really curious what you learned about the juvenile arena. You know, it seems to me that a question I would have, did you find that we are over-aggressive? Meaning, years ago, you'd do pranks, you'd do things, you know, as a kid. Now it seems like they can't even look sideways without us taking them into the system or just a less aggressive approach to that. It just seems to me that, you know, what did you learn politically from society as a whole when you did these studies as far as our premature judgment, our quick to judge and stuff on this whole juvenile arena especially?
Well, I think what we've learned is that widening the net, which is really what's happened, through zero tolerance policies and very harsh laws, through kind of mandatory sentencing guidelines even within the juvenile justice system, has drawn a lot of kids into the system whom I think we know don't need to be there. A lot of school problems, which in my generation used to be handled in the assistant principal's office, you know, now require the police come into the school. They're the same problems. I mean, they're just kids fighting. Kids fight. I think that there clearly are some kids that are serious and worrisome and threats to public safety. But if you look at the sweep that we've expanded here, we're bringing in a lot of kids that aren't serious, that aren't threats, that can be dealt with through more informal processing. And it's just a lot cheaper to divert a kid from the system. So the question is, you know, when you get kids who are fighting at school, do you really want to bring them in and formally petition them and spend the expense to process them, or do you want to do something that involves the principal and the parent, you know, the way that it used to be in the old days? There's no evidence that the new way of doing it is more effective as a crime reduction strategy. What we do know is that it's much more expensive, and it doesn't really work.
Thank you.
State Representative Fred Kessler, but I also have the advantage of having been a judge for 11 years, including a juvenile judge for an 18-month assignment. I want to follow up on Al's question because he's raised what I think is a very interesting aspect of it, and it's concerned me greatly is that one of the tragedies that we've seen is that people no longer are willing to make professional judgments, and instead they won't take the risk of deciding to have this resolved by the assistant principal or by the policeman on the street. Instead, they decide, because of fear of liability or because of all sorts of different concerns, future criticism, they don't take the risk of making a decision on the street or in the school or in the church or whatever instantly. Do you measure that at all in these various studies? And is there a way that have you tried to at least focus decision making farther down on the level so that it doesn't have to necessarily end up in the police department, the DA's office, or in the juvenile court?
Well, Larry, I'm going to have to ask you to answer that quickly. The Senate is going into caucus in this room,
okay.
So we need to vacate we need to end at 10 and vacate in about 5 minutes. So can you answer that?
So what we're trying to do is to develop instruments that can be used by people at that front end of the decision-making stream, so that they can manage risk more effectively by using objective criteria to decide, rather than saying, I'm not going to make the decision, I'm going to let the legislature make the decision on what I have to do.